Hello, and welcome to the newest episode of On the Odd. If you enjoy On the Odd, please consider supporting the show at patreon.com/ontheodd.
From the paranormal to the extraordinary, from the weird to the wonderful, this is On the Odd.
I'm the J57. J57.
Yo. What up to J57? What up to you?
I said stop!
Stubborn hell, don't go against the current.
Tonight we have a very special guest. His name is Joseph Flammer. He is a paranormal investigator and a MUFON UFO field investigator. His primary focus is on Long Island in the Hudson Valley region of upstate New York. Joseph has written 2 books and many articles about UFOs and served on the editorial board of MUFON's UFO Journal for 2 years. I'd just like to also point out, MUFON stands for the Mutual UFO Network. I'd just like to really push that. He's also written 3 books about ghosts and the paranormal with his longtime ghost investigations partner, Diane Hill. Together, Flammer and Hill are known as the Paranormal Adventurers. The duo has written stories for such publications as Fate Magazine, Ghost, Haunted Times, Long Island Press, and many, many others. Since they started working together in 2005, they've spoken over 700 times throughout Long Island and in New York City. Please welcome to the show, Joseph Flammer. How are you?
Good, thank you.
I really appreciate you taking the time out to speak with me tonight, and I'm really interested, not only because I think your work is fascinating, but I'm also on Long Island. So, of course, I have a love of it, you know.
What part are you on?
I live in Hewlett, on South Shore, Nassau.
I know where it is. Yeah, nice place.
Yeah, I like it. I grew up around here, then I tried to escape. And we moved to the Merrick and Seaford area.
Okay, good. So,
but we got pulled back, you know. It happens, right?
Yep.
But yep. And you're out there in the Brookhaven area?
Brookhaven in South County.
Yeah, I love it out there, man.
Nice quiet area.
Yeah,
nice
it's like, yeah, you can just really, really kind of get back to a little bit. It's nicer, it's quieter, and the houses are more spaced out. That's something I personally really like about it. But and that's Suffolk County in general. So I wanted to kind of I just want to point out that you do have a total of 5 books total. I'm going to put a link to all of them in the show notes, but they cover a lot of different types of topics and different points of view with UFOs. I guess you probably get asked this mostly at first, and that's, how did you first become interested into the subject of UFOs and the paranormal and all that kind of
well,
good stuff?
I had no interest in the paranormal, other than watching Casper the Friendly Ghost.
Sure.
And I was with some friends, a group of 5 other friends, and we were at a creek in Oceanside, not far away from Hewlett.
Yeah, I know Oceanside.
And the sun was just starting to go down a little bit, late afternoon in September. Beautiful afternoon. And suddenly we heard some noise, and it would sound like feet running. And we turned around, and this large lot behind us, all sand because of construction, right in the center was this dust cloud rising up into the air. And we looked at it and jumped up and looked around, wondering how, if any way, somebody could possibly run into the middle of that field and stamp their feet. And then we looked for a ball. We tried to figure out what could have done that. There was nobody in sight. So a few minutes later, we got talking about other things, and it happened again. We were sitting on these railroad ties holding back this dirt wall. And but this, at this point, the dust cloud was rising up into the air and now running right beside us, about 4 feet from us, and down to a path. And it was very strange because it was as if somebody ran right by us. We could feel it. We could hear it. And it says if you closed your eyes and somebody run right by you, you would feel it and hear it.
Sure.
Well, we got talking about, strange things, Twilight Zone episodes, things like that, when all of a sudden it happened again. But this time the dust cloud was rising up. It was going down this little hill next to us and along this path along a creek, hundreds of feet along the path. And at the end of the dust cloud was this tall, white, lanky thing. It stood in over the creek, this little creek in Oceanside, and it suddenly flew from one side to the other, to the other, to the other, to the other, and then back again into the tall weeds at the edge of the creek itself. And this whole thing lasted about an hour. We watched it. By seeing that, already the girls were crying, and we were very upset.
Sure.
Well, anyhow, to make a long story short, we went down to the other end of the creek and kept yelling to it. We saw it moving white, as if it was a white sheet, moving inside these tall weeds, bending the weeds. And we yelled to it, "Identify yourself." Now, we're 15 years old, so you have to forgive, the dramatics of it, you know. And we're yelling to it. We took off our belts, and we walked through the water with our shoes off, about a foot and a half tall, high water, and surrounded this white thing moving in the woods, yelling at it, and suddenly it just vanished on us. This became a very famous incident in the area. This also happened in Patchogue in 1895. There was a shipwreck, the Lewis V. Place, and shortly after the shipwreck, the men were housed in a local funeral home, and a ghost appeared after they were buried into this local cemetery. And the ghost, a lot of people saw the ghost, and hundreds of people would show up in the freezing February winds to see this ghost. And they would all stand at the edge of this creek, again, a creek. They all stand at the edge of the creek, and it became very famous for a couple of weeks. This ghost was seen, and then it just kind of evaporated. But what we saw led to people coming down and having parties. Like, they would have beer and they'd have pizzas, and people would dress up in costumes. And I never went because I feared the creek. But other people, I stopped by once or twice. That was about it.
But it was smart, really, you know.
It was
almost like a warning sign. I personally see things like that, and I stray away from it. I might be interested in it, but I don't think I'm the right kind of person to find out the answers for these type of events.
You know, that's a very observant point about yourself, because it is. It struck a lot of fear in me, I know that. And I have never felt really comfortable. I wouldn't run out of a room if a ghost suddenly appeared. I don't think I would, but I know other people who would. But I do have a deep fear of the paranormal. Even though I look for it all the time, even though I try to participate in, things like seances and a number of other things, I went out, with witches, things like that. But in its core, I feel what you feel. I worry about it, but it still attracts me.
Yeah, I say it all the time. I have a very healthy fear of things like a Ouija board. And a lot of people say, "Oh, come on, it's just a Ouija board." And for me, I just know it's within me that if something bad could happen, I would just be welcoming this moment. And just this fear that's within me, it's letting me know, don't mess with this. Just don't. And I'm okay with that,
It's like an internal security guard, warning you. Right. Yeah, I got you.
It's like holding a lit firecracker. I'm just not going to do it. I know what's going to happen.
I don't subscribe to demons. I'm not into that whole bullshit with the feeling that there's evil around every corner. If you sprinkle some ridiculous water on it, it's going to go away. Maybe I should say ridiculous because a lot of people believe in that.
Yeah.
But
I understand what you mean. I'm sorry, go on.
It's so interesting to see these, like on television, these, 20-year-old girls who, or men who really have no hands-on experience with anything.
Mm-hmm.
And they can tell you the solution. They can tell you what's happening. They can tell you all the information, and all incorrectly, I think. They just like make stuff up at the top of their heads. They just, too often I see that on television. I have to cringe.
Yeah, there's a lot of dramatics when it comes to this reality television of ghost hunting. And, I think that it achieves what it wanted to. It creates interesting television. But I think I think a lot of times I do believe that evil forces do exist. I don't believe that they're in every corner. I don't. But I think that a lot of times these a lot of times these people are putting themselves in a situation where they really could get into a little bit of trouble here. And it's none of my business, really. But I've spoken to people who do paranormal investigations, and I always ask them, how do you psychologically prepare yourself? Do you protect yourself in some type of spiritual way? And I don't think it's ridiculous to say, well, you know, how is this water going to protect you? You know, just because you said a prayer over it. And I buy into the fact that I think the water on its own does nothing. It it's really just the prayer itself, maybe. I do have a belief. I do have a religious belief, but it's not like I'm a holy, holy person or anything like that. But I do have a belief system with all of that. But yeah, I'm very surprised that these people will just walk into the room in almost a machoistic attitude, like, "Oh, come on, this thing can't hurt me." You have to take some level of precaution, I think. And again, yeah, it's none of my business, but come on.
I've come across cases where I went face to face with something I don't understand, whether it's this thing that's supposedly a demon, an angel that was thrown out of heaven and is now in a war with God, and we're caught in the middle. I'm not so sure I feel that that's really the case. I've seen people on television, and again, too often, these people are seemingly false, go into a house and they feel that right off the bat it's a demon. And they talk about it as if it's a ghost. A ghost and what they call a demon are very different things.
Absolutely.
You know, a ghost is the spirit of a person who's dead and trying to somehow resolve something, in my opinion. But to link it immediately to a demon and you sprinkle it with water or you say a prayer and it all ends up by the end of the hour that it's all done, everything's okay, you know? It just doesn't feel right. But I do know demonologists, and ghost hunters. I have gone ghost hunting with Jason Stephen Grant from Ghost Hunters.
Mm-hmm.
You know, things like that. And I've seen good ghost hunting, and I've also seen what I think is television ghost hunting, and the two are different.
I think their hearts are in the right places, but I think sometimes for ratings' sake, the dramatics are pushed up a little bit much, from my personal taste.
What the hell's that?
Right.
You know, that kind of crap, you know? Yes, exactly. You got it.
But, and you know what? You have to make money. I mean, that's life. But
right.
But I do, I think that these guys do, their heart is in the right place. And hopefully they, I don't know, I think they still do it. I think they still believe in a lot of it. I know they separated at some point. I don't really, unfortunately, I don't have time to watch television as much anymore. But one of your books I wanted to bring up is called Long Island's Most Haunted Cemeteries. And I wanted to know, not just haunted, but how far back do some of these cemeteries go here? Because we have a ton of history here on Gilligan's Island.
St. George's Cemetery in Hempstead, a prime example. It's old. It goes back to the Revolutionary War.
Wow.
So it's one of the oldest cemeteries. It's right in the heart of Hempstead, and you can see the church spire. It's very very tall. That's a place that I feel is haunted, and that's a good example of it. But it doesn't have to be a very old cemetery necessarily to capture paranormal information, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
You know, again, going back to the TV, this is what people see. That's why I'm pointing out TV.
Sure.
But people have these $65 tools that they put down that are used for finding, you know, studs in walls and stuff. And they claim that when it moves or light goes on, suddenly there's a ghost there.
Yeah.
Well, there may be signs that of some kind of paranormal activity. My gut feeling, though, is when a ghost wants to make contact, you'll know it. It's not going to be any, you know, I had some examples. I went to with my partner, Adams, Tennessee, to we did an investigation for 4 days of the Bell Witch Ghost, which is the only ghost known in America to ever have killed a man. And even the state of Tennessee has a bronze plaque to discuss this and recognize the fact that this really happened.
Wow.
Very interesting stuff, you know. And the Bell Witch, I have seen things with the Bell Witch. I did see a black figure walking through tall grass, lifting its legs up high. Again, the thing I saw in Oceanside when I was 15 was about 8 feet tall. It was like cigarette smoke that held together and it moved. You could see its arms and its legs, the form of its head. You could see its movements. It was very lanky. In fact, so many people have seen it in the area that they call it Sasquatch.
Really?
People who live right along. Yeah, it's very well known.
I just want to ask you. I know Oceanside pretty well. I've never heard this story. And I'm just curious, because I had one particular situation when I was little in Oceanside. And I'm just going to throw it your way and see what you think. And I'm curious if it's even a similar spot. Right off of Atlantic Avenue, there's a car wash, and then there's a road. And this is boring all the people who don't know Long Island. But there's a road that goes down to an elementary school, and I had a cousin that used to go there, and I would go with my cousin, and there was a creek right there.
Mm-hmm.
And we would go down there, and I remember we would go there and walk around it, and it was not a big creek, but it was just a water passage. Like, I guess when it flooded, it would fill up. And that's an area where I was probably 8 years old or something like that. And, that's an area where we would see kind of these weird creatures, like little creatures. And like, I would think back that they're mice, but they weren't mice. These were like just kind of little somethings. I'm not really sure what they were.
Well, bingo, you hit the right creek. That's what
is
I'm
that
talking
really
about.
Is that really the spot?
It's the Woods Avenue Creek, right off of, if you go down to that little school you talked about, the elementary school, walk across the property through a little street, it'll bring you right to Woods Avenue. And Woods Avenue Creek is right there. Yeah. I know somebody, for example, I heard a story where a guy was driving down the road, and his car just veered into another car, Volkswagen, smashed into it. And it was right at the edge of the creek. And when asked, how did that happen? He said, I don't know. He said, I was just doing the speed limit. I had my eyes on the road. And all of a sudden, this white thing flew across the road, and my car veered right into the Volkswagen.
Get out of here.
There are stories like that, numerous stories like that.
I gotta learn more about your story. It's not a story, your situation that had happened to you when you were 15. That's fascinating to me. But, I mean, on a personal level, it's fascinating just because it's the same spot.
The same thing more or less happened when we were studying the Bell Witch. We saw this black figure walking through the grass. And then we went into this cave right on the same property where this man had been killed by a spirit and back in the 1800s. And we were in the cave, and I got pushed from behind really hard. And I was photographing a tomb of an old Indian tomb, and when I turned around, there was absolutely nobody there. There, across the large cave, there was a young lady discussing something in whispers with a guy, and my partner, who I thought did it to me, was across the cave, not even facing me. So, you know, it's very strange. These kind of things actually happen. Why are they violent? I could understand why people would say, oh, it's a demon, because it's not a friendly thing. It doesn't seem to be a well wish. It seems more to be an attack. And I can understand why people believe in demons, and I'm not ruling them out. Mm-hmm. It's just that I don't subscribe to that evil thing, whatever it is, that I also feel and you feel and other people feel, that it's a demon. You know, because it's too big of an argument. That's about God and Satan, and that's a real heavy thing. It's out of my league, pay grade.
That's a really good point, actually. You know, it's like you're kind of looking at it for what it's presenting to you physically, instead of getting into like the philosophy behind it. Because
as a ghost hunter, I'm always interested in the mechanism and the relevance. What is the relevance? You see a ghost. For example, a state Supreme Court judge is at one of our lectures, and when I asked, does anybody have anything you'd like to say, any stories? And that, you know, I always ask that. He raised his hand, and rather than just sit there and tell a story, he left his wife's side, stood up, walked to the front of the room, turned around, and addressed the entire audience. He said he was in his Garden City home on the second floor with his son. This is a state Supreme Court judge. And he said they were talking in the hallway when suddenly this figure came right out of the wall, walked down the hallway, didn't look at them, walked right past them, went to the other end of the hallway, dressed in old clothing, old attire, and disappeared into the wall. Now, he never understood the relevance of it. He didn't know who it was or why it happened. Mm-hmm. I'm always interested in what is the relevance? Is it, you know, a great-grandfather? Is it a former property owner? Is it a man who committed suicide? Is it a man who had been murdered? You know, or is it somebody who's trying to get attention and this is the best they can do? Or does it have nothing to do with the person who died? Is it only a tape playing over and over again that, you know, you can go back to 5 years now and maybe see the same thing?
Right. Wild, because I think people call that residual haunting, where it's just kind of like
right. It's
a loop. And that's, you know, that on its own is a very scary thing to think about, that, you know, energy is like so contained and that it's actually playing a reality over and over again. Why do you think?
And how?
How? Oh, yeah, exactly. Mechanism? How? Yeah, I mean,
yeah,
that's the biggest mystery out there, I think. You mm-hmm. know, how any of this? And then on top of it, why?
Yes. What's the relevance? Yeah, why do it? What happened?
To screw with us.
Maybe so.
Do you find, because you've done a lot of investigations and you've done a lot of research for all over, really. Do you find that Long Island is any more active than any other part of the country? I mean, my focus is that it is, but that might just be because of a few specific famous cases. And I live here, so I'm biased.
Are you thinking of the Amityville horror case?
Yeah, you know, that's super popular. You have that Seaford House that...
The Seaford House, yes. Mm-hmm.
Which I used to live four blocks from, actually.
I think the Seaford House has probably more truthful than the Amityville Horror House.
That's what
it's true. Six people were killed in the Amityville Horror House, the DeFeo family. Ronald DeFeo took a gun to them and shot them dead. But as far as the truth of it, I had conversations, or I should say that one of the owners of the property and I had correspondence, and that correspondence indicated that it was all false. Everything was false about the house. The house is beautiful. It's well maintained. The heating doesn't click. There's no flying pigs. There's nothing like that. And it's sold for $1 million. So, you know, the Seaford House, however, seems to have really had a poltergeist, according to people that I've interviewed and people who I've met, people who live in... I spoke in Seaford many times, and I've run into people who came to my lectures who had inside information about it, and they said, yeah, it was real, man, you know?
You know, I had... We had a house on South Street in Seaford, and we found out after we had been living there for a while that... that a death had occurred there, not that recent, but a few years prior to us being there. And we had all of these kind of weird things going on there. So that was my whole, like, all right, what else is going on in this area? And I came, and this is years and years ago, I came across the article about the Seaford House, and it's only four blocks away, and, you know, my mind is just racing and racing and racing. But thankfully, my situation kind of went away with a storm, so to speak. And that's just, you know, I'm very thankful that the issues that I was having kind of went away. But the story in Seaford, it really does seem, I mean, the house is so normal looking now. It's actually a lovely Long Island house. You know, it's like a normal house. And you don't have a feeling there. There's no, like, this or that. So Have you ever had the opportunity to investigate that house?
Not that house, but I investigated another house in Seaford where the husband and wife, good-looking young couple with some kids, were always at each other's necks. The kids always fought. And when we were there, we sat at a table, and the entire table vibrated. It shook. And the seats that we sat in vibrated. We thought maybe it had something to do with a train. There was no train anywhere around it. Not far from what you just mentioned, by the way, South
really?
Street.
Yeah.
And there was a very old house, and the couple was divorcing, and they wanted to know what the source of the anger was. And believe me, there was palpable anger. You could feel it. You could almost cut it with a knife. And I was glad to get the hell out of there. No, but I never went to that house that I seen it, but I never investigated the house. You know, sometimes I'm not really, I like to investigate places where people can go. I know there, I mean, I've been to many a haunted house. But I can't invite you there. I can't invite the public there. I can't show you anything about it on video because it's private. I can't really tell you the address. I can't. So I like to go to places, and that's largely why we're ghost hunters that study cemeteries, places where you can go, I can go, and other people can go and investigate the paranormal. Need an address. You can get in there. You can see exactly what I saw. You can test it with your equipment. You can do all that kind of stuff. Private house, that's it. They're only going to invite me. They're not going to invite other people, you know?
Yeah, it's you make an excellent point there because nobody really wants to, you know, if you're just living there and you bought the house, you don't want these people driving past your house every 20 minutes. I'm sure that wears off very quickly. The Amityville house is a beautiful home. You've seen it. I've seen it. It's in a really beautiful area, and I'm absolutely sure that if I lived there, I would just be completely pissed off at people who have to drive by at 2 miles per hour as they get their little picture. It would be cute for 20 minutes, but it would definitely, I mean, Halloween, I couldn't even imagine. Come on.
No, it's awful. They changed the address to try to throw people off, but you can, you know, you've been there. Yeah. I've been there. It's a very distinct looking house. It's easy to find.
Yeah.
The street isn't all that long that you can't find it. So, you know, but there's another place that, you know, every place that I write about, my partner and I write about as far as hauntings go, is a place that you can investigate. We give directions in our books. We tell you how to get there so you can actually go there and investigate.
That's really not cool, like, actually.
It is. Because that's what I would want if I bought a book. I want to know where it is. I want to go there. I want to see it, you know? And I think a lot of people appreciate that. But one place that I would like to talk about is Sweet Hollow Road in Melville.
I've been there, yeah.
You've been there, right?
Sure.
Has anything strange happened to you while you were there?
I shot a video there. Years ago, I used to own this website that was about the history of Long Island. And we were trying to document the tales of it being there. Our cameras futzed out. Our audio became horrible. And I want to go back to that audio and listen to it a little bit.
Mm.
It was a disaster, to be honest with you. Mm. Everything that could go wrong there went wrong, but it was freezing out. And that makes for things to not happen. So we had technical difficulties, but nothing paranormal happened.
Mm. Well, I know that technical difficulties is common there. I've experienced it. I've seen it happen 100 times there to people. Brand new batteries just fail. Mm-hmm. Photographs come out all screwed up. You know, double image on a digital, all kinds of weird things.
We couldn't get in focus. There was so many weird things. That just never happened anywhere else.
Now, I bet I know your website, even though I don't know it by name, but I'm sure I've seen your website and probably. Did you go up and down the street in the video?
I'll even say it's forgottenli.com. Don't look for it because it's not there anymore.
Okay.
We own it still, but it's, you know.
Yeah.
It's a dream that I just don't have the time to work on.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, yeah, so Sweet Hollow Road, though, it's a pretty trippy place, and a lot of people have experiences there.
Mm-hmm.
And that brings us to the next topic, really, UFOs.
Yeah.
Because UFO, I don't know how you know, I used to be embarrassed for people who would, like, come to our lectures And they would suddenly say, like, no, but I saw a UFO I wanted to tell you about. And I'd dunk my head and say, oh, God damn, I don't want to hear about your UFO, you know? And then all of a sudden, some things happened to me with UFOs. I was with a group of engineers and scientists, actually, and we went out to a cemetery in Yaphank at midnight. And we did a meditation from Dr. Stephen Greer's, one of his books. He's a part of the Disclosure Project. You might know his name.
I do.
And he has this meditation to try to reach the UFOs, you know, the aliens and UFOs. I thought it was the most preposterous, ridiculous thing I've ever done in my life. I was ashamed of doing it. I went out to the field at midnight with these very intelligent men and a woman. And we went ahead and did this meditation, and we left, and I thought, you know, I just wanted to see what it's about. I just wanted to really, you know, I have some experience with reading about UFOs, researching and so forth. Okay, you know, but I left saying, oh, that was just fucking, you know, oh, man,
right.
You know. And I hopped in my car, and I was going, I went across Long Island to somebody's house, and I was going through the Garden City area. And suddenly I see this enormous, looks like a jumbo jet times a jumbo jet up in the sky with no FAA lights, nothing like that, paused in the sky, standing still over a large parking lot very close to me. I mean, maybe 1,500 feet at most. And it was just sitting there. And I couldn't believe it. So I hit the brakes right in the middle of the road. And I just sat there for about 2 minutes staring at it with my mouth open. I couldn't believe it. And then at that point, I saw across the parking lot, police lights come on, and a cop saw that I was sitting in the middle of the road doing nothing. And he started coming toward me, and I stepped on the gas. And I went across a green light, and I turned around, and I looked, pointed the car to the parking lot again, and it was not there. It was just gone. And I looked, you know, since I have access to the files for MUFON as a field investigator, I found out that there were a group of people who spotted UFOs in the same exact area where I was staying, right down the block from where I was sleeping that night.
Wow.
So then it started every day. Every day something happened. And I wrote a book called UFOs Over Long Island. Because I had to explain, I guess, to myself what was going on. And I was really not that knowledgeable about UFOs at that point.
You
really
were a skeptic.
Got into it after
you
that.
Needed, you didn't have the personal experience until that moment, and you became one of those people. You know?
Yes.
There's no shame in that. You know, it's...
Well, a lot of people would say are nuts. But you know what's interesting? It wore off. After about 6 months of that, this heavy, every day it seemed these oddities took place. It just vanished. It just stopped.
Let me ask you. With, I think on Long Island we have a pretty decent level of bullshit detector, right?
Yeah.
I think maybe it's because we grew up, you know, so close to Queens and Manhattan. We're kind of street smart-ish people.
New Yorkers, yeah.
Now, you know when somebody comes to you and they're like, I saw this and blah, 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 and it was this. And you could just probably tell very often, this guy's just full of it. Like, this guy is making this up and whatever. I'll let him finish his story, but that's it. You know, I'm not putting any credence in it.
You know those, like, the people. All right, here's a great example. There was a very beautiful woman who came to one of our lectures, and she raised her hand and she said, I saw an angel. I'm a psychic, and they always start out with, I'm a psychic.
Yeah.
I'm a psychic, and I saw an angel. And I said to her, really? I said, wow, what did the angel look like? And she shrugged her shoulders and she said, you know, your regular angel. Now, I would call the New York Times, I would call every television station I know to get there to photograph this angel. She's like, regular angel. What the hell is a regular angel? I asked her. What is a regular angel? I've never seen an angel. Forget about a regular angel.
Sure.
You know? And that's kind of, you know, too often I find in lectures, for example, when I ask questions, people say, oh, I have so many ghost stories, I don't even know where to start. You know, sometimes that throws me off right off the bat, you know. But when you see that little old lady in the corner, and she stays afterward, and she's staring at you, and she's afraid to even address you, and she comes up and says, I think I saw my husband.
Right.
He came to me. You know, something like that. You feel like there's some kind of genuine...
There's something there, right.
Yeah, something going on. But I think people have even the people who see regular angels and the people who have so many stories they got to tell you, that there might be really a true line of some experiences there. I am not the one to judge that. It's not my call. But, you know, sometimes it doesn't feel right to me. It just feels like, and sometimes I get letters from people. This is interesting. They say, you got to contact me within 24 right away, please. I can't live like this anymore. So, my partner and I, we dash to the phone. We call them, they don't answer. We write them an email. They never write back. We never hear from them again.
Mm-hmm.
What the hell? We were going to help you. You know, you're begging for this immediate response from us. We go to apply ourselves, and you're not even answering the phone.
Yeah. I guess what I wanted to ask basically about that is, after you had this experience, do you think that maybe you refined it a little bit? Because now that you actually physically experience something, you now know, it's kind of like this is now a part of you. And when the person comes up to you and it's like, well, I saw something, it's like it kind of helps you debunk it a little bit.
With UFOs, yeah, UFOs and ghosts, actually.
Mm-hmm.
But, I find that with UFOs, there's a big difference between ghosts and UFOs. And this is, you'll notice that you'll recognize this right away. With UFOs, when you talk about UFOs, you talk about presidents that have seen them, generals that have chased them, colonels in the Air Force that have flew F-18s after them. They have been tracked on radar. When it comes to ghosts, you have some guy with a tool from Radio Shack saying, yeah, they were ghosts there.
Yeah.
You know? It's like this whole different thing. there seems to be a lot more science built into the UFO problem, because there is people who are engineers and physicists, like you had Stanton Friedman,
yeah,
on your show one time.
Yeah.
Now, there's a man, holy crap. He's a nuclear physicist who has been studying this and believes it,
you know?
My
favorite thing he said was, I've never seen a ghost. I've never seen a UFO. But I've also never seen an atom. And I know it exists.
Right. Right. He's kind of a national hero, I think,
yeah.
Because he speaks up for people who, he holds to it, with that it's a truth that this is happening out there, and he's not backing down.
No.
And
God,
so I really respect him for, yeah, yeah.
87
yeah.
years old and sharp as a tack.
Yeah, he's right. Yeah, he's really cool. I really admire him.
Him and I spoke a lot about MUFON. So I wanted to ask you a little bit about MUFON. I've always loved what MUFON does, the Mutual UFO Network.
Mm-hmm.
I think that if anything in the past, I can't put such a number on it, but I'm going to say the last decade or so, they've really refined what they do. They take their investigations extremely seriously. They have people like you who do these investigations very seriously. And they compile tons of data you don't even know what's going on. There's no level of, it seems anyway, invasiveness. You never hear anybody complaining that, you know, who's harassing me? MUFON. You never hear that. And, I wanted your opinion as to where MUFON's going and what they've done and what they do. And, I don't know. I guess I really would love to have a clearer view as to what they want to do with all of this data and what's the next step for MUFON even. I'm just not sure. I know with Tom DeLonge, he released some really interesting video. I know his writings are being really well received. He's got some pretty serious money that he can use to hire these big players in the research field. I'm just not really sure where it's all going.
Well, I think I would have to say that the Academy of Arts and Sciences at to the Stars Academy, is, you know, separate from MUFON, although there's definitely ties in with the, you know, to it. Again, you're referring to the three videos that were released from the by the government that show there were F-18s, jets that were chasing after things in the sky that they didn't really couldn't identify, but that reached Mach 5 in the sky. And one was over the East Coast, that where we live, you know. MUFON's a volunteer organization, the largest of its type in the world. It has a lot of different layers to it as far as investigation. For example, I'll do an investigation. I'll submit my information. They're always interested in publishing that information. They want to get it out while it's fresh, right away, to the public. And what the public does with it, there's no charge that the public has to do something with it. There's no destination for it. It's what you really feel that you want to pursue with it. We're providing the information. We have no money to do anything. You know, I was part of an investigation in 2015 that was deemed the one of the top 10 worldwide as far as scientific value. And
really?
We had I did the writing of it and the investigation of it, and we had another person, the chief investigator for New York State, who was did the work of using a Geiger counter and so forth, and found that there was six times the radiation in the ground after a UFO had been spotted there. And so but the problem is this: there's no money to hire a special team to come and to do any work there. We had to get there from Long Island, and a gentleman from way upstate New York. We each had 3 hours to travel there just to get there before it started raining, before the ground
was ruined
by water. We did it within 48 hours. But there is a team for MUFON that we can summons, but they're from all over the country, and they have to pay for the plane fare themselves. They got to pay for everything themselves. MUFON doesn't pay for any money. I had people write me and say, I really want to be a MUFON and field investigator. Where do I apply and how much will I get paid? And I have to write back and say, I'm sorry, man. This is all voluntary. This is like, you got to be interested. Ask them from inside you. There's no money. There's nothing like that, you know? And people are always fascinated. How do I make money as an investigator? What can I do? I mean, you can lecture a little bit. You know, you might make $1,000 or $2,000 a year if you really apply yourself. And you can write books, and there's no money in books, really. So how do you make money from it? Well, unless you're Stanton Friedman or somebody way up at the top, you know, maybe making movies about it, you're not going to make any. Even if you make movies, like my friend Jennifer Stein, even if you make movies, you might not make any money, you know?
Well, you know, Stanton, you know, he made his money, you know, as a physicist, really. I mean, assuming. I don't know his financial status, but I don't think he's loaded or anything. He probably makes a good living, you know, being that, you know, he actually helped develop a nuclear aircraft. I mean, it's crazy what he worked on in life.
I know MUFON wrote about that, just recently. Yeah.
Fascinating guy.
Yeah, it's interesting because, I mean, I've been invited places, and the best that you get out of it is they pay for the hotel, they pay for the food, they might throw you $100 for transportation, but that's it, man. You're not going to make any money.
I used to be a member of MUFON. I stopped being a member. I think I'm going to look them up. I told Kathleen Martin that, and she's like, oh, great. And I'm like, oh, I didn't do it, you know, but this time I think I'm going to do it, because I not only do I think that it would be great for research purposes, but I just know keeping in the loop of something like that and giving it my few dollars a month is not going to, you know, it's going to the right place, I think.
It's, you know, you really have people that are pouring it on, like Roger Marsh, who's head of communications for MUFON, giving it his all, you know. You have volunteers who are really trying because they feel deep in their hearts that something's out there, and they want to be part of the community that finds it, that figures it out. And now you have the Academy of To the Stars Academy that is really trying to make some headway now, so that we can, you know, filing Freedom of Information Acts, all that kind of stuff, to try to get information, really get at it. But MUFON is doing what it can with what it's got. And my hat is always off to MUFON. I have deep respect for everybody at the top layers of it. The one problem is there's too much paperwork. You know, in recent years, we have to file out all new files and stuff, and we have to fill out all these forms that I don't appreciate.
So, come on, MUFON, let's go digital.
Yeah, there you go.
You would think that they would, you know, definitely. I'm sure there's a reason for the paper trail. It's just, nobody likes paperwork.
Yeah. No.
You mentioned Stephen Greer before, and
yeah.
I know he's associated with transcendental meditation, and I do TM. Like, I'm a big advocate and pusher of TM. I took the classes before, like in the late '80s when it was. I think it was like $180 to take this huge course. Now it's well over $1,000. But I'm wondering, like, you know, with his meditation, and, you know, I've heard of him. I just did a quick search, and I'm like, oh, it's the TM guy. I'm curious, you know, he's putting you in this interesting state of transcendence, and, you know, it's just really interesting that your experience. I know I'm jumping a little bit around with what we were talking about, but putting you into that state of meditation is a powerful state for your psyche, and you know, then for you to have that experience, it just kind of hit me. I'm like, that's a really kind of magical experience right there.
Mm. It was not. I would not have thought that would happen. I got to say, when we were in the cemetery, we wanted to find the darkest place we could. The meditation was pretty much, we relaxed, we thought about what it would be like to go into space through the solar system, further out into the universe, and call at that point aliens to invite them to follow us. And we turn back in our heads, head back through the solar system, back to the planet, right to the spot where we are, and say, here we are, show yourselves to us. And, you know, we did it seriously. We really made an effort. And, of course, if you've never done it before, you might kick yourself in the ass and say, oh, what a stupid thing I just did, you know. But it really turned out to be something I can't explain. It's like, it's some kind of mystery that I have yet to really understand.
It's like, little did you know that you were going to be even more confused.
Yeah, I didn't count on that. It never happened to me. Nothing ever happened to me like that.
Wow.
You know, but there it was.
So, Joe, where would be the best place to contact you if somebody has a concern or a question or they just have, I guess, even just... a suggestion for a Long Island place or something. I'm not really sure if you take suggestions.
Just be kind. And don't do anything too foul. It's Joseph Flammer, lowercase, Joseph Flammer, one word, Flammer, at yahoo.com.
Okay.
Joseph, Joseph, Flammer, at yahoo.com.
And your website is also paranormaladventurers.com.
I'm going to put adventurers.com.
You know, I'm in scouting with my son, and it's funny because they have the Venturers. So it's like I'm like, oh, okay, that's the second time I've seen it used. I like it.
Uh-huh.
Sounds like I like the spelling of that more. Something about it reminds me of the 1940s.
That's right.
It does. I don't know.
I like that. Nobody has said anything like that to me. That's cool.
No, I like it. Again, you work closely with Diane Hill. On this website with her, and you are the Paranormal Adventurers.
Just she and I, yes.
You do a number of speaking engagements. You could be contacted for those speaking engagements.
Yes, we you just drop me a line and we'll respond. If you can't find me, just look up Paranormal Adventurers or Ghosts on Long Island. You probably see me somewhere around
there. Yeah, that's how I found you.
Yeah. Oh, good. Good. Okay.
But and I'll put a link to everything in the show notes, including to your books, to a publisher. Do you do autograph signings or anything like that? A lot of my listeners are always looking for that stuff.
Well, when we sign books. When we sometimes libraries or some other place wants us to sign books mm-hmm. and to sell books. So we're always up for selling books. If we didn't, we would be worth our salt.
Yeah.
But, yeah, we're up for that anytime, really. I mean, not just for selling, but also for talking with people. We'd love to lecture. We love to, you know, we call it lecturing, but really it's conversation.
Yeah.
You know, because we involve the audience. We all share our opinions and try to come to some kind of conclusion, if you will.
You know what? There's one, if I could just squeeze in one more question. Mm-hmm. Or comment. I know that you're doing research right now on
right.
The bodies. I think it's Gilgo Beach. Is that the area?
Right.
I used to work for a newspaper, right. And we used to get all these just speak to people and it's like, yeah, this and it happened again, and we're all just kind of trying to come up with like headlines. Like people are just kind of throwing ideas around, and I remember when it was first hitting. When they were first finding these bodies. Mm-hmm. And it's horrifying. I think it's scary. I mean, that area, you've been down there a bunch of times, I'm sure. It was
yeah.
the area where you would take your car if you have a fast car or a friend with a fast car. And that's
right.
where you would open it up,
Yes.
Near the OBI, the old
right.
Beach Inn. And right. It's a cool area, but it's creepy. It's dark.
Yeah.
My first instinct, and my design partner, him and I were like, it's a cop, like we hope it's not a cop, but it sounds like who else has access, to this area to be left alone. And I have friends who are police officers, and of course they gave me the stink eye when I said that, but, and I'm not pointing fingers, of course, but you're doing a lot of research right now on that. Do you have any information? I mean, the 10 bodies basically showed up. Have there been other bodies or other evidence or anything like that you could share?
Well, there is a man who just in this year, 2017, went to prison for the murder of two women and possibly a third. He was charged for two murders. The bodies were they were strangled and they were thrown. The bodies were thrown in the woods in Manorville. Wooded area in the Pine Barrens, and the assistant district attorney said that his handiwork was probably also responsible for at least one murder of the 10 women who's or the 10 people I should say, because there was one male who were found.
I didn't know that.
Were found at Gilgo Beach. They found one male who was Asian, who was dressed like a woman, who is a sex worker. These are all believed to be sex workers.
Mm-hmm.
But there are seven other bodies besides the 10 that were found there, seven other remains that police suspect the Long Island serial killer might have something to do with. And there's also a couple of newspapers have reported that there were four bodies found in Atlantic City in a ditch, women who were killed very much like the Long Island serial killer killed people. And very creepily, they were all staring in one direction and towards Long Island. The people, the police feel that that might be significant.
Wow. So right now you're working on something. You're compiling information.
Yeah, I don't typically write about serial killers, but I have a publisher, Schiffer Publishing,
mm-hmm.
and they contracted with me, please, can you write a book about this?
They have a lot of great stuff.
Well, thank you. It's not just about Long Island serial killers, and I'd rather the Long Island serial killer. It's about other serial killings and also some top murders that took place. Murderers, I should say.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm still in the research process and doing it, but I got to have it on my editor's desk by December, so I'm probably going to have to ask for like a 6
Well, what are you talking to me for?
I know. I got to get busy.
No, aside from your books that they have, mm-hmm. they do have a lot of great topics, and mm-hmm. they seem like a really cool publisher with a forward thinking, with a forward vision,
yeah.
which is pretty awesome.
I like Schiffer, yeah. Yeah. It's like communities, friends, family,
And I just wanted to bring that up because that's completely different. I mean, it is and mm-hmm. it isn't. A lot of people might connect it to like kind of a psychic thing, but.
Well, I got to say, though, I'm taking a little twist with it. Because I'm a ghost hunter and a UFOlogist, I am really looking at the paranormal aspect. For example, I think Jones Beach Island, where all these bodies were found, it has a long history of killings. Mm-hmm. It goes way back to the pirate days. So I'm looking, I'm not competing with the New York Times or, you know, I don't have the money, I don't have the time, I don't have the facilities. I know about ghost hunting. I'm looking at it through the eyes of a ghost hunter. And that's where I belong. And that's what I'm doing. So, and I am finding a lot of paranormal intersection going on here, you know. There's a lot of crossroads.
That's awesome, yeah. Man.
So I'm sticking to what I know and, you know, and that I believe in. That's my goal.
Well, if you ever want to come back on here and talk about it when it's, you know, getting closer and closer, the door's wide open then.
Oh, please, also, anytime you want to invite me back, it's been a pleasure. I'm really happy to talk to you.
Yeah, me too. I'm really glad you accepted my invitation. And,
glad. You're a Long Islander any day.
Appreciate it, man.
Keep in touch.
Even though I'm NASA.
That's okay. I'm in NASA right now. I'm at my girlfriend's house.